Talk given Sunday, 4th November, 1973. Those of you who are seriously interested in the Buddha's teachings know that what is known as the Paticca Samuppada, the cycle of 12 factors which are the conditions on account of which there is the uprising of what the Buddha called ill or dukkha. And he also pointed out the way to its extinction. This Paticca Samuppada, as it stands, starts with the affirmation that ignorance is the condition because of which there arise the, sometimes translated as activities, sometimes as volitions, sometimes as conformations. Ignorance is avidya, avijja. The conformations are sankhara. Conditioned by these factors, there arises vijnana, discriminative consciousness. Conditioned by that, there arises nama rupa, often translated mind body, best translated as in the Abhidhamma, as mentality materiality, nama rupa. Nama can also be regarded, although it is not so regarded in India, in any of the books extant, as the informing principle. The word nama is related to the Latin nomen, which right up to the Middle Ages was used in theological discourse to imply the informing principle of that which is manifest, the rupa, the shape. Rupa means shape, form, and therefore people have loosely taken it for the body itself. But mentality, materiality is a translation which is very much closer to the Buddhist feeling itself. Conditioned by these factors, there arise the sense fields, the six sense fields, salayatana, or in the Sanskrit, sadayatana, you see, shad is six. The six sense fields, the ordinary five senses that we know of, and as in all Hindu Buddhist teaching, discursive thinking, the world of the imagination which builds up pictures and so forth as a result of our speech faculty interpreting our sense experience, that aspect of mind, which is essentially the speech faculty, is regarded as a sixth sense, as the sixth sense. And it is classed more in the material group than in the mental group. One of the Buddha's great nuns, Dhammadinna, her name means the giver of the doctrine, the teaching, the truth. You see? Dhammadinna, she says, and she has the authority of the Buddha himself for it, that discursive thought is an activity of speech. Feeling and perception are activities of mind. Now, as a result, a condition then by all these factors, including the six sense fields, there arises feeling, vedana. It is not sufficient to translate it as sensation, because sensation in English fundamentally means bodily sensation, which is conveyed by the nerves to the brain. But vedana as feeling is a more generalized term, which of course includes the bodily sensations. Conditioned by these, there arise... Oh, I beg your pardon. Before that, there is contact. Because of the sense fields, there is contact with the external world. Fassa. Now, it is rather important to bear in mind this point. Hitherto, all this may be limited to the individual being himself. Now suddenly there appears this thing called the external world, because of which, and because of our senses, there is contact. As a result of that contact, fassa, there arises feeling. As a result of experiencing feeling, because of our preferential choice, which expresses our reaction to all the stimuli that come to us, there arises craving. Now, craving is the central villain of the piece as far as suffering, the ill state, dukkha, is concerned. Craving. As a result of craving, there arises apprises, upadana, there apprises the urge and the activity towards obtaining something. With this uprising, upadana, and as a consequence of it, there is a becoming. A becoming. And here, of course, there is the crystallization of all our psychophysical energies in producing a result, the apparently desired result. Or sometimes, if we do not know how to direct our psychophysical energies, it's an undesirable result. But whether it is desired or undesired, or undesirable, it always comes, there is a crystallization and final appearance, a birth, jati. But consider jati also in its profounder meaning, a conditioned state, because whatsoever comes into being is conditioned. You'll find the Buddha himself teaching this very succinctly and clearly in one of the long discourses, the Mahasudassana Sutta, that's it, in that one, you see. This conditioned state, now every conditioned state, as soon as it comes into being, says the Buddha, of necessity begins to break up. And if it is something which is desirable in the breaking up and the loss of it, there comes decay and death, jara, marana, and therefore there is misery, lamentation, sorrow, and the whole doleful tale is there. Then again the cycle starts because of ignorance, as it is called. But there is no explanation offered whatsoever of the origin of this ignorance. There is nothing said about a possible, profounder metaphysical and ontological significance to this avidya, this ignorance. We'll go into that a little later. At least we'll try to go into it. Because it's, as far as I'm aware, not in any of the books. Or given out in ordinary teaching anyway, anywhere. Now, note carefully this appearance of the external world after the six sense fields. Contact, because there is the external world, because we have the senses, they operate in their own way, and there is this contact, fassa, which gives rise to a feeling. Note also that craving is the root difficulty, the villain of the piece, which produces all this. Now I want you to consider carefully another presentation which comes only once in the entire Pali canon. And this presentation has one extremely interesting point. The Buddha goes through this Paticca Samuppada, and he mentions birth, jati, and then omits jara marana, the breaking up, the death and the decay. He omits that. And he says, what is the cause of suffering? Birth is the answer. It's translated as birth. Jati. Stick to the word jati and realize it more as the conditioned state. The conditioned state is the answer. Yea, I say that the conditioned state is causally associated with suffering. And so also is becoming with birth, etc. Going backwards, right up to ignorance again. But, as I say, he omits jara marana, and he says in the previous sentence, what is the cause of faith? Suffering is the answer. Yea, I say that suffering, dukkha, the ill state, is the cause of faith. And he goes backwards still in the previous sentence, and he asks, what is the cause of joy? Faith is the answer. And then he goes back and says, what is the cause of joy? A rapture. And from rapture to serenity, and from serenity to happiness, from happiness to samadhi, translated in the ordinary way as concentration. Here also it's translated as concentration. But remember that samadhi is the supreme communion, the state of complete at-one-ment with reality, the nirvanic state. You see? So in this, you get a branching off. Now, he repeats that and presents it in this way. But before I read you the final presentation, I'll read you how he starts off this particular bit. The Exalted One said, in him who knows, who sees, I say that the intoxicants are extinct. Not in him who knows not, neither sees. The intoxicants are extinct. What are these intoxicants? The asavas, as they are called, and the literal meaning of the word asava is an overflow or an exudation. The intoxicants are, or the cankers as they are sometimes translated, the canker of the sense pleasures, the canker of the passion to become this, that and the other, the canker of speculative views, and the canker of ignorance itself. Those are the cankers. Those are the intoxicants. Now, it is usually thought that all these produce the ill state. But I would turn the thing upside down and present it this way. That if and when one is no longer in the state of right samadhi, of right attentiveness, of samasati, of perfect attention, and therefore also samasamadhi, consciousness overflows in the direction of the sense pleasures, ambition, the passion to become this, that and the other, in speculative views, and into the state of ignorance, dominated by ignorance. You look at it this way, and you will find much greater depth and meaning and logical sequence involved in that way of approaching it. This is very important. So now, in him who knows, brethren, who sees, I say that the intoxicants are extinct. And of course, in him who sees not, the intoxicants are there. Then he goes on. Now, the knowledge about the extinction of the intoxicants, that, I say, is causally associated, not the opposite. And what is that which is the cause of knowledge about extinction? That is to say, you yourself, when you have realized complete purity and perfection, and can maintain the right state of awareness through every moment of the day, then you know that the cankers, the overflows, will not occur. You see why I suggest that regard it as overflows and not as cankers. If you regard it as cankers, you think of something outside yourself which is doing this. But in actual fact, it is this overflow of your own awareness, your straying away from the perfected state, the holy state. Your straying away from it means that your consciousness slides in the direction of sense, pleasure, ambition, and all the rest of it. You see? So now, what is that which is the cause of the knowledge about extinction? You know that the cankers will not, the overflows will not take place. Liberation is the answer. And what is that which is the cause of liberation? Passionlessness. And the cause of passionlessness? Repulsion. Repulsion is the word used here. But in actual fact, what happens, and this is common to all the great mysticisms of the world, when you begin to see the truth, and you really are getting into tune with it, you naturally turn away from. It is the real metanoia which takes place. Not the metanoia which may be imposed upon you from outside, or which merely intellectually you may accept as such, that it is necessary to turn away from the worldly state in order to realize the holy state. You see? So, repulsion means that turning away from. It is not aversion. That's what I want to emphasize. Because aversion simply means you are again in the state of conflict, you're caught. And what is the cause of turning away? I say that the knowledge and vision of things as they really are is the cause of turning away. And what is the cause of that? Concentration. Right attention, perfect attention is the cause of that turning away. You see, is a cause of it. And what is the cause of right attention or concentration? Happiness is the answer. And the cause of happiness is serenity. Nothing to do with pleasure or sensation or excitement, but serenity. Note carefully. And the cause of serenity? Rapture. But this rapture is not, again, an excitement or a disturbance. And what is the cause of rapture? Joy. And the cause of joy is faith. You may remember before, in September, we considered this business of faith quite deeply at one of the meetings. I don't know how many of you were here on that day. Faith is the cause of joy. And what is the cause of faith? Suffering. And what is the cause of suffering? Jati, birth. Being in material existence, the ultimate state of concretization. And then the usual thing, from jati he goes on to bhava, upadana, tanha, vedana, etc. You see, the usual paticca samuppada. But here, this paticca samuppada, instead of running round and round the circle of sorrow and suffering in misery, there is the release out of it. But now notice these factors which he mentions. Faith, joy, rapture, serenity, happiness, finally samadhi. Joy, rapture, happiness, serenity. These are the factors characterizing those of you who have studied your Buddhism carefully or experienced it, I hope, yourselves. These are the characteristics of the first jhana. The first state of the deep state of consciousness in meditation. It's very interesting that these are the factors which form the basic groundwork as far as your psychophysical existence is concerned for the release of awareness into the transcendent. Into the immortal, the deathless. You see, Jaramarana is not mentioned in this. It's most interesting. It's really fascinating. Consider this very, very carefully. That this factor of Jaramarana is left out in this. At the Buddhist summer school many years ago, there was a very interesting talk given. This was mentioned, but certain very important points were omitted. There was no exposition of them, namely that the aspect of death, the death of the psychophysical organism was not mentioned, and the other point that there is contact with an external world which appears from somewhere. Ordinarily, Buddhist teachers talk of this as the explanation of the emergence of the entire universe that one experiences. I say no, that is wrong. It isn't so. This paticca samuppada is essentially concerned, fundamentally concerned, with what happens to you yourself, the individual, in your own mind. Your own thought process is really the paticca samuppada. And as long as you're caught up in the thought process, and remember that intellect and thought are the slaves of desire, tanha. You see, as long as you are caught up in that thought process, you will always go round and round and round and round. The freeing of oneself in that thought process is the emergence whilst you are alive here. That is why Jaramarana is out. You see, whilst you are alive here, there uprises this thing, faith. And it is suffering which is the cause of faith. Now, this does not necessarily mean that one is confined to being miserable first before faith can arise. But the awareness of suffering need not be your own pain and misery only, but you see it around you. Your sensitivity, your consciousness awakens to the fact that in our manifested existence there is this world woe, this Weltschmerz, as the Germans would call it. You see? And so it arises that way. Most significant. It happens whilst you are alive. And it comes into being also because even if you are confined by ignorance to your thought process, you obtain a contact with an external world, a not-self. And so this conflict, this duality of self and not-self arises, and there you are, you're caught in it. This is very important. But you see the way out. The way out is the way of happiness. You don't have to seek happiness. In the process of awakening, and the process of awakening can take place only because there is the basis of purity, the silas, the moralities, the absolute purities, the purity, all the way through, you see. That is the basis. If that purity is there, then in your meditative process, the memory and the itch and the urge for the sense pleasures and the overflow of consciousness in the direction of sense pleasures or planning to satisfy your ambitions or anything like that, all that goes out. And you're in a state of faith and serenity, and out of it arises joy and rapture and happiness. And out of it all, finally, with the going down of that, plus the going down of all sorrow, not merely your sorrow, but sorrow in its totality, both in its ordinary, worldly, mortal sense, as well as in its transcendental sense, takes place. And then you are man. You are the perfected man, the Arahant, the worthy one. Arahant means the worthy one, as the Buddha put it. You see? And that means that you see all these other things. You have the knowledge and vision of things as they are. There is the turning away from worldliness. I would put it this way, instead of talking of a turning away, you are turned inside out. This is the result of that transformation. To put it in still better terms, all self-orientation has completely vanished, and there is only this awakened consciousness of a total reality, denying no relationships whatsoever with any element of that total reality. This takes place, and then there is the passionlessness, and there is liberation, freedom. Cheto vimukti, the complete freedom of the attention, attentiveness. And that is the nirvanic condition. That is also the condition in which what the Buddha called the shunyata phala samadhi, that is to say, the communion which is the result, the fruit, phala is fruit, of the fruit of voidness. The voidness, what is this voidness? It is being void of all evil in one's thought and feeling, one's speech and one's action. It's as straightforward and simple as that. And it is as difficult as that. You see? Right. Now, I'll read you that final section. The whole thing comes up in full. Just as when, on some hilltop, when rain is falling in thick drops, that water, coursing according to the slope, fills the hillside clefts and chasms and gullies. These being filled up fill the tarns. These being filled up fill the lakes. These being filled up fill the little rivers. These being filled up fill the great rivers. and the great rivers fill up the sea, the ocean, even so, brethren, there is causal association of activities with ignorance, of consciousness with activities, of name and shape with consciousness, the sixfold sense sphere with name and shape, the sixfold sense sphere of feeling with contact, of craving with feeling, of grasping with craving, of becoming with grasping, of birth or the conditioned state with renewed becoming, of sorrow with birth. Jara marana is left out, death and decay is left out, notice carefully. Of sorrow with birth, of faith with sorrow, of joy with faith, of rapture with joy, of serenity with rapture, of happiness with serenity, of concentration, samadhi, with happiness, of the knowledge and vision of things as they really are, with samadhi. This is very important. You see the tremendous implication of this. In the state of samadhi, that state of communion, there is no separative, discriminative consciousness at all. You are in the state of the completely unified mind, the unified awareness, which doesn't separate things out. And yet at the same time, it is fully aware of all the relationships of the innumerable many which make up the totality, the one, as we call it. This is the extraordinary part of it all. These are the things which need to be expounded carefully, but, well, I've never heard anybody bringing this out. Of knowledge and vision with concentration, of repulsion or turning away from ill with the knowledge and vision of things as they really are, of passionlessness with repulsion, of liberation with passionlessness, of knowledge about the extinction of the overflows of consciousness with liberation. So you see, that supreme state of awareness, of communion, is the one in which at last there is complete enlightenment. That which started with ignorance, the unenlightened state, the unawakened state, has now come to complete fruition. It is the light that lightens the whole world. And remember that the world in all these religious contexts, first and foremost, stands for your own psychophysical being. This is your world. You remember in the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha says, I lay down that in this fathom-long body lies everything, ill and the way and the release from ill. It all lies here. So this is your world. And what applies to you, to yourself, the microcosmic world, applies also to the macrocosmic world. Because the vision of man can extend only so far as he can have a completeness of vision with respect to himself as a human being. And he can't go beyond that. That is why his macrocosm, as long as he is man, will necessarily bear the limitation of his manhood. Whether it be the enlightened manhood or the ignorant one. These things have to be carefully borne in mind. Very good. Now that is how it stands in the Buddhist presentation. Now I want you to try and consider with me this matter of avidya, ignorance, as it is called. You know, they say that the Buddha had nothing to do with metaphysics. As far as the Pali Canon goes, this is considerably borne out. But such a statement is only a partial statement. That's to say, it tends to be misleading. It is totally impossible to give any sort of ethical teaching, any sort of teaching concerned with the liberation of the individual, without an implied metaphysic in it, at least. It's quite impossible. There has to be an implied ontology, the origin of being, the origin of things, the source. Because if there is not that implied source, the whole idea of goal and of fruition is completely out also. There can be no goal unless there is a source. There can be no coming to fruition unless there is the non-fruited state, but which is implicit in the seed. So the seed has to be there. The source has to be there. You see? Now this word ignorance, avidya, let us look at it, let us savor it and try and go into the depths. Feel your way through with me in this. We call it the unawakened condition. Man is characterized above all by this extraordinary phenomenon which we call consciousness. This sensitivity which enables us to be aware. We start off with a sensitivity which is undeveloped, which grows slowly and steadily through the impact of stimuli upon this psychophysical organism. And slowly we obtain what we commonly call knowledge. But this knowledge which we obtain is confined to the world of things and phenomena in the beginning. Out of this knowledge of things and phenomena in the beginning, we have this slowly growing faculty, the intellectual faculty, by which we can abstract significance and meaning. We can begin to see relationships, we can begin to see patterns of the ways in which the life process and the world process manifests. We begin to see all this, but we are in the first stages of awakening to the world as such, we are naturally self-oriented. For the very simple reason, fundamentally, that this organism is descended from an animal species, belongs to an animal species. And there is the law of the animal functioning through us, the instincts and the reflexes and so forth. The animal is concerned with self-preservation. That is our first duty. And that remains our first duty and will always be our first duty as long as there are human bodies as we are at present existing on the globe. Right, so there is this self-orientedness which colors and completely dominates our grasp of all our knowledge. You see, this is the important point. This self-orientedness. But there comes the time when we grow up, grow out of that. Well, at least we come to see that this produces conflict, this self-orientedness, with the not-self. Each person is like myself, self-concerned, and our desires and preferences differ. Our ambitions conflict with each other. Our passion to preserve ourselves at all costs even to, at the cost of eating up one's own wife, if the situation arose, as it did amongst primitive peoples, you see, well, we do it, and so forth. You understand? But gradually, there comes a change. One begins to see more deeply, because one experiences the emergence out of oneself of an energy which we call love, which wants to include the other, include the others, one's own family, one's friends, and so forth, within oneself. And in this process, there is the awakening to the meaning, the significance, the beauty of what is called self-sacrifice, of putting aside self-concern for the sake of the loved one, and so forth. Side by side with that, there is the awakening of this sense of wonder and marvel at the beauty of things as they are. And also this extraordinary fascination of the pain and the horror and the terror of existence. And yet they grip one. And we begin to see that even in this pain and horror, which we experience because we are what we are, even in that, there is an extraordinary beauty working. There's an extraordinary purposefulness coming to fruition. And more than that, we gradually begin to see that there is a remarkable karmic activity going on all the time. A karmic activity which adjusts the universal process in such a way that an ultimate balance, an ultimate harmony might be maintained. So all these things awaken the intellect first to deeper things. And when that is combined with the growth of compassion and unself-centeredness in us, then at last vision begins to appear. Then one realizes that there is the possibility of this disciplinary process of growth, a learning process. And if one uses one's instrument of salvation, namely one's power of attention, in the right way, then this can be brought to fruition. And that which we called ignorance has now become transformed into enlightenment. The darkness is light, has been converted to light. When that enlightenment grows and grows, it is not merely a case of more light only. It is a case of realizing that the darkness and the light are an identity. This, you all know how often it has been said, the source and the goal are one and the same. The origins of creation and existence, which we call ignorance in Buddhist terminology, and the goal, the fulfillment, the fruition in terms of enlightenment and perfection and holiness, they are an identity. This is an extraordinary thing. This great mystical nothing, as we call it, the void, the no thing, which is pure energy in itself, stirs in such a way that it produces differentiation. And when differentiation appears, first of all, there is incorrect relationship between them. So there is conflict and difficulty. And this brings about the whole cycle of pain, sorrow, misery, etc. But it is that itself which is the very stimulus for the conversion of the darkness into the light, of unenlightenment into enlightenment. And thus we grew. So now, this metaphysical and ontological significance of ignorance, the starting point as we call it, should be really understood. When one really understands it, what happens is that we get freed from this unidirectional movement, that we start like this and we end like that. We get rid of that illusion of a unidirectional movement. Because if it is a unidirectional movement, the ultimate end must necessarily be death. But I say quite positively that all the changing garbs of in which immortality clothes itself are expressions of mortality. Immortality manifests itself in terms, the one immortality manifests itself in terms of multitudinous mortalities. But when there is this real awakening, this real understanding, one sees mortality not as the ending in the sense of an annihilation, but in the sense of a complete transmutation. There is no annihilation. There is only eternal existence, eternal life in its reality. So then, the darkness and the light, mortality and immortality, time and eternity are completely at one. When, as and when, the mind can really be permeated, suffused by this realization, you will find that the ultimate metanoia, the ultimate transformation, has taken place. In the words of the Buddha, there is now no more to be done. The Brahma path, the holy, the Brahmacharya, the holy life has been lived. But has been is a slightly misleading term. It should be, is now being lived in perfection, free of the domination by time, by circumstance. And therefore, dukkha, the ill state, the distorted state, the state of disharmony is completely out. That is, it is not cast aside anywhere. It has been transmuted because of your transformation from the worldling into the perfected holy one.